We hit hour number two on this Friday, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios. It's Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Lots of talk around the quarterback position in a couple of NFL cities, certainly Houston, and now definitely Seattle, with the recent developments about Russell Wilson and his relationship with the Seahawks moving forward. Here to make sense of it with us from 710 ESPN Seattle, Danny O'Neill joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Danny, how are you?
I'm doing well, Vince. I'm grateful to be on. It's always good to talk to you guys.
Yeah, we normally only talk to you like the week of a Cardinals-Seahawks game, so this is kind of nice, an off-season visit.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's so nice for the Seattle Seahawks or for Russell Wilson as they conduct their public arm wrestling match.
Yeah, and some of these new details I think are fascinating, and it's kind of opening up a different level of it, if you will. Give us your overview of how we ended up here and where is this thing going?
We ended up here because there's frustration on the part of Russell Wilson that they haven't gotten back to the Super Bowl in any of the past six seasons. Since this team made the shift from being built around a dominant defense with a power running game in which Russell was, I don't want to minimize his role because they don't win the Super Bowl and they don't get back to it the next year without him, but he wasn't asked to do the heaviest of the lifting. He was asked to make the big plays down the stretch of close games. And since they've shifted to him being unquestionably the centerpiece, they haven't gotten past the divisional round of the playoffs, and he's frustrated at that. And I think this past season, the way it ended after a very promising start, has accentuated that. And if Russ is looking at the second half of his career now, and feeling that I'm not going to be satisfied if we don't get better than this, and how do we get over a hump in Seattle? And then that if we don't get over the hump in Seattle, I'd like to try it somewhere else. I think that's how we ended up here. Where we go from here is a great question. I get the sense that he doesn't want to be traded right now, but he wants them to know he's willing to ask to be traded in the future if this doesn't improve. And if that's the case, it's going to put an awful lot of pressure on 2021. Every sack is going to become micromanaged to see whose fault it was, whether it could have been avoided. So I don't think he's going to get traded this year. I would have said last week there's no chance he would get traded, and I don't think that's necessarily the case right now. I don't think he's going to get traded this year, but there's an awful lot riding on 2021 for Seattle.
In that answer, Danny, you brought up something that I've been fascinated by for a long time, and that Super Bowl hangover, the way they lost to the Patriots in Glendale in their second Super Bowl trip, it was talked about immediately after. It was written about. Players on the team talked about the hangover effect. But you mentioned it 6 years ago. At some point, don't you just get over it if you're Russell Wilson?
I honestly think, Vince, I don't think it's the way they lost that Super Bowl stuck in the craw of a number of their defensive players and a couple of the offensive players, too. I don't think that's what's still going on here. Look, there was an extended period of time where guys believed they didn't give the ball to Marshawn Lynch because they didn't want him to be the hero of the game.
Right.
But there was that depth of feeling. I think it's silly. I don't think that at all entered into any of the thought process, but that kind of shows you how they wrestled with coming to grips to that and kind of finding someone to blame for a catastrophic loss. I think this, what's happening right now, is more about Russell and his vision for what he wants in his career in his frustration that they haven't been able to get back. And honestly, there's some finger pointing that's going on of him saying, hey, I'm great. I've been great. We haven't gotten past the divisional round of the playoffs. What's the problem here? And then it's started talking about pass protection, and it's gone away that the way this has progressed, I think he's rubbing people, certainly in the organization, the wrong way, but I think there's some hurt feelings among teammates, and it's going to ramp up a lot of pressure, like I said, on this offseason.
Yeah, this is so interesting to me because the same Russell Wilson was once some of those hardcore dudes in the Legion of Doom couldn't vibe with him because he was such the teacher's pet and so favored in the organization, and he always seemed to just always want to please everybody in the organization. He just sounds like a different guy now. Has he changed from your vantage point, or was he always this way, just covered it a little better?
Yeah, I think he's always had a sense of he's always carried himself in a way that is not the most relatable, I think is the gentlest way that I could put it. And there are a lot of players whom he rubbed the wrong way. And I think that came because he never saw him as peers. He was at the same age as a lot of those Legion of Boom players, mm-hmm. Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin and some of the guys that have had, and he was always a piece apart in a way.
Yeah.
I think some of that's the natural part of the position. Quarterbacks aren't part of the rank and file. Quarterbacks are their management, but they don't really have any power over anybody. Like, it's a weird sort of space to occupy. I think what's coming out now is in some ways an extension of that. And a lot of those guys are pointing at it and saying, see, I told you this was there, the self-interest. I don't think Russ is wrong, though. I don't think there's a victim in this situation.
Right.
I get what Russ is saying. He plays for a coach who's approaching 70, is the oldest in the league, who likes to run the ball more than Russ would probably prefer, who freaks out about turnovers, and Russ would probably be like to be given a little less scrutiny over that after 9 seasons of showing he's pretty responsible with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the way that they've him going along and saying everything right and being the non-controversial franchise quarterback, which he's been, they haven't gotten past the divisional rounds, so now he's flexing a little bit. And he's saying, hey, how about you eliminate the sacks? Like, how about we focus on that? You haven't signed any free agent offensive linemen. Like, they've drafted a lot of dudes, but they haven't spent money on the position. How about consider that? So he's saying it hasn't worked your way. Maybe we should try some of the things I'm suggesting instead of just, like, nodding your head, pretending you're listening, and then doing what you're going to do anyway. At the same time, that's definitely out of character for what NFL teams like their players to do, even the quarterbacks.
Danny O'Neill is our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. I'm curious about the viewpoint of Seattle fans in all of this. And Bick and I were talking about this earlier. Even in the playoffs this year, after a 12-4 season, Russell Wilson had his worst game against the Rams, 11-27. Yep. Yes, he got sacked 5 times, but he was not good in that game. How much do you think the fan base puts on the shoulders of Russell Wilson in terms of culpability for not winning getting the ultimate goal accomplished?
Yeah, more now. Yeah. I would say that. More now since he's become more vocal, and that's part of what happens with finger-pointing, right? That it becomes, hey, protect. I should get some more protection. And he's right. They certainly could and should protect him better. He also takes, I would say, about a quarter of the sacks he takes are kind of based on the way he plays the game. He holds the ball longer than most guys. And I think that any explanation of why Russ is choosing now to speak out kind of devolves into amateur psychology. Mm-hmm. It kind of has to, because I'll extend it beyond what you just said, Vince. I don't think the second half of the year, I thought that was, I don't want to say it was a slump, because he wasn't bad, but he wasn't good.
Uh-huh.
It was the most extended period in which I felt he played average to at times poor that he's had in his career. And after that, he comes at speaking out. And I think there's a question of is he struggling with sort of the responsibility for that? Has he reached a breaking point because he felt like too much was on me, too much was asked of me, and it kind of caved in on me before? It's the second time we've seen it happen where they've tailed off noticeably in the second half of the season. The first time was 2017. They missed the playoffs. They went 9-7. They lost that last game of the year to the Cardinals when their field goal kicker missed another kick, and they changed offensive coordinators. This time it was kind of like the final 2 months of the season. It was that god-awful playoff game, and now they changed offensive coordinators again. So there's a little bit of Groundhog Day going on here.
One of the really interesting things to me is that Russ did an interview with Dan Patrick before the Super Bowl, and Russ could not bring himself to declare Tom Brady the greatest ever, and that was before he won. And he made it a point to say, I've got a plan for that, meaning he's going to be playing another 15 years, and he's going to be the greatest of all time. Is that a troublesome lane for him to be in? Because good luck catching a guy with 7 championship rings, and I don't care who you are.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dan. You kind of want to applaud the effort and say, like, that's the kind of mentality you want in a competitor. But there's also kind of a sense of, oh, man, if that's the bar, like, that you're setting, and anything short of that's going to be a disappointment. Like, this could be, you could be flying too close to the sun here.
Right.
This might be an Icarus moment. I agree with you. You want that mentality, but there has to be a sense of reality. Seattle hasn't failed Russell Wilson. Like, Seattle hasn't. They've had a winning record every year he's been here, and he's a big part of that. But you know what? The team around him is, too, because there's some really good quarterbacks in this league that have missed the playoffs. Drew Brees has missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers has missed the playoffs. Like, that happens. So it's not like he's been given a hoopty to drive, and it's not like Deshaun Watson, who looks down there and is like, I got this quarterback, I got this coach who's trading one of the best receivers in the game for a running back that wasn't playing for his old team. Everybody's getting fired. So there's a little bit of, I would agree with you, and that's part of where it rubs in your teammates. Does Russell Wilson want to win more than other guys on this roster? Does he want to win more than Dwayne Brown or DK Metcalf? When you start elevating yourself and your legacy above, you're kind of saying, like, my ability to win is more important than your ability to win, and that can be corrosive to a team.
Dude, you dropped Icarus and Hoopty in the same answer. That was really well done.
Great name for a band.
Yeah, Icarus Hoopty. All right, here's my last question. Yeah, that was, well, that's range, bro. That is serious range. Okay, so here's my last question for you. We've been hearing that, okay, Pete Carroll's got nobody around him to tell him what's what, that he's got no one holding him accountable. He's 70 years of age. Where does Jody Allen stand on all this? I mean, if it comes down to it, couldn't she just replace a 70-year-old head coach to keep a quarterback happy, or is that not in the cards?
I don't know. I'm supposed to have a strong opinion for you there.
No, that's okay.
I don't know how Jody's going to run the team. I don't. I think we're all learning it. So far, we've seen very much status quo with how the team, the direction the team was headed when Paul Allen unfortunately passed. I do feel, as someone who considers himself very pro labor movement, I feel it's like a fever dream to be an employee and go ask your boss, like, who's holding you accountable, which I think is just hilarious.
Right.
But yeah, right. I think ultimately it does come to Jody. There's been no inclination or no sign that they're considering changes, both John Schneider and Pete Carroll's deals have been extended a year out. They haven't even gone into the final year of their respective contracts. Mm-hmm. Pete's always said that he sees a 5-year horizon, that he won't try to plan beyond 5 years, and that he still sees himself coaching 5 years from now. But if this is a power play in that sense, I have a hard time thinking that ultimately the decision is going to come down from above, that we're keeping the quarterback over the coach.
Yeah. Danny O'Neill, 710 ESPN Seattle, our guest. I got one more for you, Danny. If I'm the Seahawks front office, starting with the media tour the week of the Super Bowl, I'm pretty upset at the way Russell Wilson has handled this in such a public nature. I think that gets ramped up to the nth degree with the existence of a list that includes four teams that he was obviously leaking to his camp was leaking to the media. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think the Seahawks front office anger level is with Russell Wilson right now?
I think this front office is probably at a 7 or an 8. I think Pete Carroll's at a 4 or a 5.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important. Don't underestimate Pete Carroll's pain threshold for turbulence. Like, what we've seen from Seattle, I mean, you can have a fist fight between receivers before Super Bowl, and both those dudes are still playing.
Yeah,
I mean, all
true.
Of the different things that are happening. Marshawn Lynch did not get on a bus to go to a playoff game, and that was the first the team heard that he might not play in that game, and he started the next week. So Pete's in terms of a circus, there isn't anybody that will tolerate more tense in the NFL than Pete Carroll. But I think there are people, and I'll bet that there's some dudes in the locker room, too, that are feeling this, that are really mad about the way this has been handled. I think Pete, somebody was saying, like, Pete's got to be at wit's end. I'm like, no, I bet Pete's more chuckling and like, oh, well, let's see what he's going to do next. Is he going to threaten to hold his breath until he passes out? I think he's waiting to see this work itself out. And in that way, actually, Pete's shown an ability to get the most out of players by, like, you go do what you do, and I'm not going to freak out about it, and I'm not going to try to say you shouldn't do that and act right. And like, all of, he kind of lets guys have their say, and when he's ready to move on, he doesn't hesitate to move on, but he doesn't let guys talk themselves into his doghouse.
Yeah. Danny, great stuff as always. Thanks for spending some time on the show today.
I always love talking to you guys. Take care.
Thank you. Danny O'Neill, 710 ESPN Seattle. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit coulterinfinity.com.
Well, it's hard to plan on turnovers. You know what I'm saying? Like, that, it's just not something you go into a game thinking, guys, you know, they're going to give it to us 20 times tonight, so let's get ready. You know what I mean? I think you have to plan for the efficiency that they play with. You know, playing with Carter at the top and, you know, the ability to shoot the ball, their movement. They have a few bigs that can, you know, play in the connector spot, and their guards, you know, Zach and Kobe, they come off that thing flying. And Satoransky and, you know, those guys are pretty good in that environment. So we're planning for their best. And that's the respect level that you have to have for a team like this.
It's Monty Williams talking about tonight's opponent, looking ahead to the Chicago Bulls. First of a three-game road trip for the Suns tonight. The Bulls 15-16, but yeah, there's a lot of reverence in those comments from Monty Williams because they're playing good basketball. They have an all-star as their best player in Zach LaVine, who finally got rewarded. I mentioned Kobe White. Thaddeus Young's playing well off the bench. They look like a team that's coming together quite comfortably.
Zach LaVine's over 28 points per game. That's quite a jump for that young man.
Yeah.
Who has always been a theatrical player, can jump out of the gym. So this is a good test for them. And I think that every one of these games are going to be tests, because the Suns pretty much have wasted away every mulligan they might have had going into the season with the string of losses to sub-500 teams, inferior opponents. And that is witnessed by, like you said earlier, Jay Crowder being able to rattle off that stat.
Yeah.
Right off the top of his head.
Yeah, that's been communicated quite clearly. And while Monty Williams was looking ahead there, in yesterday's media session, even the day after the Charlotte game, there was still a lot of reflection on that game. Here was Monty Williams.
The reality is they beat us. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, there were some breakdowns. We gave up a transition lob in the fourth quarter, you know, in the last part of the game, you know, and then the next play we miss, they come down and in transition and get a three after a swing drive, you know, that's them, you know, they played well. There wasn't the urgency that we needed in that moment, but I'm not totally on board with just saying it was us. You know, they got us, and it stings that we were up 17 in the second and weren't able to build on that and you know, have a good lead going into halftime. But they did what they had to do to win the game.
Yeah, I totally agree with Monty Williams. And we said that, you know, yesterday on the show and reflecting on that game. To me, to lose the Brooklyn game when they were shorthanded and they had the big lead, and, you know, you got some of the late game heroics from Joe Harris and James Harden in that game, I felt like that one stung because the Suns played nearly a flawless first half, and the Nets were terrible at points in that game and were still able to come back.
And the Nets were so decimated by injury.
And I'm not saying that you accept that loss to Charlotte, because it's not good when you blow a 17-point lead against anybody. But to Monty's point, Charlotte played well for four quarters. They really did.
They did. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think they deserve to win that game, but I think their mentality is also troubling to me, because even though the Suns have been playing well until the last game, there's just a different kind of attacking going on at the Suns' defense, of which DeAndre Ayton is a piece of. And the idea of trying to guard guys on the perimeter, it is not working, and it seems to be a point of emphasis for other teams. And there's nothing wrong with that. Seven-footers generally can't hang with guards on the perimeter. I put that more on Monty. I put that more on strategy than I do DA. So, the whole switching on picks in the NBA, I think you said something real smart a couple of days. I believe it was you. That nobody
couldn't
believes,
have been me.
No, nobody. Well,
it was a couple of days ago, Vince.
Nobody believes in fighting through picks anymore.
No, the strategy league-wide is, you know, switch on everything.
Switch on everything, and so it becomes a game of chess, and the offensive players, they get a better matchup than the one they start off with. I don't know what you do in a situation like that. Do you start off a guy guarding someone who you really don't want on him to begin with, to hope that he passes, that you pass him off to somebody you intended to? I don't know. But it looked to me like, and maybe it was a function of LaMelo Ball, who is just hyper quick and very aggressive and always prodding and really a handful of a basketball player. I that's what I'm going to be looking at tonight. How much do they try to isolate DA at the elbow and try to beat him off the dribble, knowing that the Suns don't always have help for him and that he doesn't always stay with this guy? That's got to get fixed. Because I'm willing to give Charlotte credit, but that element of it has got to get fixed.
Yeah, I mean, DeAndre Ayton is a really good defensive player. We've seen some breakdowns lately, and I think on that particular play that you referenced, the LaMelo Ball dunk, there was a lot of breakdowns there from the strategy to the isolation that they were able to get to DeAndre Ayton playing too far up on LaMelo Ball and allowing the blow by to the lack of help on the back end. I mean, DeAndre Ayton, good defensive player, but he's the only thing really resembling a rim protector on this whole team.
I know. And he's really, and he's hit and miss with that, because I would love to see, even though you don't blame DeAndre Ayton on a blow by when he's trying to guard LaMelo Ball or somebody else, but DeAndre Ayton, with his size and his wingspan and his leaping ability, should be able to extend even if he's beaten on a play and block a shot. He doesn't even leap. That's kind of the thing I see with DeAndre Ayton. It's like he plays basketball with sore feet. It's like he doesn't want to jump.
There is.
I don't know. I'm just
there are times,
spitballing here.
Yeah.
But there are times when he gets beat on a blow by, when a guy who does get beat on a blow by isn't, if you're 7 feet with a 7'6" wingspan, you don't just assume you're handing him off to somebody shorter than you underneath the basket. You follow him and then time your jump and use your wingspan and block the shot from behind.
There was a play in that game where Devin Booker blew past Bismack Biyombo and then he blocked him from behind.
Right. And he blocked him right. If Biyombo can do it, so can DA. And it's the mental engagement. He just doesn't feel like he can, should, wants to. I don't know what it is, but I think my issues with DeAndre Ayton are not really defensive specific, but I'm curious to see if the league thinks they've figured something out in terms of attacking the Suns defense.
Well, we'll see, because the talk before the Charlotte game was how great the Suns defense had been and, just playing straight up defense not relying on steals and block shots, but just good, solid position defense. I don't think you figure that out in one game. Again, I think Charlotte played really well. Here was Jay Crowder also yesterday reflecting on that loss to the Hornets.
We felt like it was just very immature. We got to find out how to be consistent with winning and just trying to find a way to win each and every night and not letting anything slip away. We just felt like, obviously, you're not going to win every game in the league, but sometimes the games you're supposed to win, you got to win them. And I just feel like we got a lot of work to do with our maturity on that in that sense. But Coach did a good job today of just giving it to us straightforward, working on habits, trying to continue to do the same thing each and every day that we're preaching to each other each and every day. So it's definitely getting talked about. Coach did a good job today of bringing it to our awareness. But last night, we definitely put the game on ourselves. It had nothing to do with the game plan or coaching. It was just us let the game slip and then we gave a team life and came up short.
That's the difference this year. When you have a game like that and then you have a veteran the next day talking about, like Jay Crowder talking about maturity and pinning it on the players, that, you know, getting past that. That's why you have faith that, you know, these slip-ups, while they will happen in the NBA, even to the best teams, the goal is to make them temporary. And I think this team is equipped to make those things temporary.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I in no way, shape, or form think the Suns are no longer a top-four team in the West based on that loss to Charlotte.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. One other note, former Sun Damian Jones, he's got a new team. Signed a 10-day contract with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Uh-oh.
Could it be Damian Jones' revenge next week when the Suns visit the Lakers for the first time in the regular season? All right, that's a little dramatic.
Yeah, that is dramatic.
Suns and Bulls tonight, 6 o'clock, 5:30 pregame here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Yesterday, the Cardinals offensive line coach had some interesting things to say about his unit's performance in 2020. We'll tell you what Sean Kugler had to say straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata on this Friday, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You know, we do this whole thing collectively, and, you know, it all starts with Coach Kingsbury, and we all have our input. You know, even now, the way that we were preparing the run game, it was a collective input from everybody, and that won't change. From my standpoint, how I've prepared my entire career to prepare for the run game, the nuts and bolts won't change. So, but again, it's a collective effort, and the whole offense is a collective effort of all the coaches.
Cougs. Sean Kugler.
Cougs.
Love that guy.
Great jungle guy.
Run game coordinator, offensive line coach. He had a Zoom media session yesterday where one of the questions asked, and you heard it right there, how does his role change with his new title? And he pointed to the collective. That's not the most interesting thing that Sean Kugler said yesterday. He did talk about the offensive line as a whole.
Well, there's turnover in the NFL every year. You know, it's just a given. We have a lot of good players that we feel good about. We have a lot of young players that we're developing that we feel good about. There's some guys that are, you know, on that verge of free agency. And you know, right now, you know, we really just concentrate on the guys that are under contract, you know, getting ready for the year. And free agency, it plays out usually the way it plays out every year. You know, you may gain a guy, you may lose a guy, and that's upcoming in the next month or so.
Yeah, but a couple guys that aren't free agents right in the middle of that line in Mason Cole, Lamont Gilliard, he talked about those two players specifically, and it was a bit of a roller coaster ride for whoever played center.
The center position last year had its ups and downs. Both those guys at times played extremely well. Both those times, those guys, you know, they struggled, both being young players. They're both hard workers. They both like the game of football. I think they're both going to improve. They both have things that they need to improve upon. They know what those things are, and, you know, they need to take the accountability of improving those things.
And then he went on to say this.
Will we try to add to that room, or will we try to improve the competition? We'll always do that. We'll always try to look to make sure that we've got the best five out there and the next best five ready to go. And if that means bringing somebody in, that's not out of the possibility. So the center position overall, I think, needs to take a next step to get better. And to get better to help our offense. And that starts with myself evaluating how I'm coaching those guys. It starts with those guys individually. And if we add somebody, they're going to be right in the mix. So it's going to be open competition. And the best guy is going to win that job, and that'll play out.
Yeah, and you know, that's pointing a spotlight right on Mason Cole, who at times in his career with the Cardinals has been really good. Last year was not his best year. Four false start penalties, five total penalties charged against Mason Cole. But just from a performance standpoint, I looked up the center rankings on Pro Football Focus pick. He ranked 31st overall among all centers with a 54.4 overall grade, and really struggled in pass blocking with a number of 46.1, and played the bulk of the snaps, played 913 snaps at that position. Yeah, the bottom line is you had an elite left tackle performance from DJ Humphreys after, you know, the year after he gets paid. He looks like he's going to be, you know, a part of that offensive line for a long time and has developed into a really good NFL offensive lineman. But there's spots all over, and center being a big one. Sean Kugler's right. They need to get better at that position.
Yeah, they do. And I was one who I had a lot of faith going into the year in Mason Cole. I thought he was just, you know, one of these guys that loves to play football, that loves the position, that is, you know, has the pedigree, really struggled last year. Mm-hmm. And the penalties were almost kind of embarrassing, if you will. So I think that I like to hear the tough talk. I think it's he's identified some of the root issues on the offensive line. Like I said before, I really hope Josh Jones is ready to be a starting offensive lineman. Because if he's not, they've got a couple of significant holes to fill.
Yeah, he did.
They seem to think he is, but I mean, we've heard this before.
Yeah, here were Sean Kugler's comments on Josh Jones yesterday.
Yeah, he's doing a nice job, and you know, he got his feet wet last year, but he didn't have to be pushed into a starting role. I thought that was good. You know, I think rookies. Lately, they've been pushed into starting roles before they're ready. You know, back years ago, you weren't ready until your third or fourth year. And that still holds true. But now guys are out there and playing as rookies and second-year players. So I thought he handled his rookie year extremely well, not only on the field but in the room. I saw a lot of growth. He's a very talented young man who likes football. We're very excited about him. He offers position flexibility. He could play tackle. He could play guard. We'll see where that goes as we get into the offseason. But he's a very good pick for us, and he's going to be an outstanding lineman for the future of the Cardinals.
Yeah, that was the interesting part of that, the positional flexibility opportunity maybe to play guard, where they could have some opportunity to play. Could he be penciled in as the right tackle starter? A lot needs to be determined. Starter over there, Kelvin Beachum, is entering free agency. And I thought he was decent last year. I don't know what the Cardinals' level of satisfaction was. I know they said nice things about Kelvin Beachum during the season.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you come off a good season at right tackle, there's probably a market for him, and yeah. I don't know if the Cardinals want to play in that pool.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, you're right about that. I think I heard Steve Kimes say last week in Newsmakers Week, I may be wrong about this, that he thought that Justin Pugh had a great year.
Mm-hmm.
Did you remember that? Did he say that? Does that jive with what we watched? I like Justin, this guy, a lot.
I do, too. I thought it was up and down. I thought he really
struggled against the Rams, and I mean, that's a division opponent. But that's a team with a fearsome pass rush. Okay, they've got holes there that are bigger than just Mason Cole, in my opinion. The center position got a lot of scrutiny because of the optics, the successive false start penalties. People don't take to those kindly. It's like, you got the football. What's the matter with you? I don't know.
Yeah, that did get to be pretty frustrating. Four false start penalties from your center.
Yeah, really, it was a really bad look. Mm-hmm. It's like the delay of game penalties coming out of timeouts. It's a bad look.
Well, and one of the things that's been talked about, you know, throughout the organization from top to bottom, players, coaches, executives, you know, about the penalties, and Sean Kugler, not an exception, he talked about having to eliminate those to be successful.
We got
to
be more consistent in the penalty phase. We were highly penalized and really on a lot of pre-snap things, you know, false starts and those type things. And those are not tolerable, that you can't have those to be successful. It puts you behind the chains. It makes every single drive that much harder to be successful at the end of the drive. So we have to eliminate that. I think that'll be a big step towards moving towards consistency.
And Jarrett was able to find the cut that you were referring to from Steve Keim on Justin Pugh. Go ahead, Jarrett.
I think as much respect as we all have for Coach Kugler internally, certainly a well-deserved promotion and somebody who is going to be very influential with Cliff in the game plan. You know, he is a really strong way of teaching the run aspects of it and the blocking schemes and the different things that come with it, as well as getting players to play at a high level. I mean, I think Justin Pugh had his best year as a Cardinal. There's no doubt in my mind that DJ Humphries has turned into one of the better left tackles in the league, and I can't say enough about the way he played this year. I thought he played at a Pro Bowl level, and you know, I was really proud of those guys that we rewarded and gave extensions to. When you look at Buddha, Hop, and DJ this offseason, all of those guys, you never know when you pay them and you reward players how they're going to respond. And can't tell you how proud I am of all three of those guys with their production and the way they stepped up to the table.
Again, it's just one grading service. Pro Football Focus had Justin Pugh at a 64.8 overall grade among guards in the league, 38.
Yeah, that's not good.
And it was actually down from 2019 in terms of their scale.
Yeah, and again, the way Steve Keim is talking in that cut, you would think they were a good blocking team. The numbers say they're not.
Mm-hmm.
You take away Kyler Murray's rushing, which really that was Kyler Murray's elusiveness more than anything. And the numbers aren't so good. So, I don't know. I, 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 Pro Football Focus, their numbers, they're notoriously hit and miss. Sometimes they seem to be right on an issue and right on the money, and sometimes they seem a little out of left field. But the way I looked at it, it seems to me like they've got more holes once again on the offensive line.
Yeah, later on today, after the show, it'll be updated, the mock draft tracker on ArizonaSports.com. This week's trend, Beck, a move towards offensive linemen in mocks this week to the Cardinals.
Okay. There's a little teaser for you.
Wow. Coming up next, Deshaun Watson has spoken to the new Houston Texans head coach, but that's the only thing that's changed, apparently. We'll get into the latest from the Texans' dysfunction next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
He doesn't want to play for them. Please trade me. If you're the Texans, you have 2 months until the draft. You don't have a first-round pick. You don't have a second-round pick. If you're going to be without Deshaun Watson, you need to start getting some picks and rebuilding in the post-Watson era. So it could be that the Texans get convinced sometime in the next couple of months that they have to do it, and they pull the trigger on a deal that involves high picks this year. And if it goes past the draft, then you have a situation where it really gets ugly, and they're challenging him to sit out games.
That is the voice of Dan Graziano, ESPN, on why the Texans now need to consider trading Deshaun Watson. In a weird sort of way, you respect them for digging their heels in and saying, we have no interest in trading him. The reality is, they have to. And I think Dan Graziano did a nice job of illustrating just why that is. Because yesterday, Deshaun Watson actually did speak to David Culley, the new head coach of the Houston Texans. And according to Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle, said almost verbatim what Eric Bledsoe tweeted about the Suns. I don't want to be here.
Wow.
Not a surprise that he's not bending on the stance, but that's the first reports of communication between the two sides.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't productive for what the Texans want to accomplish.
I think that's interesting because Deshaun Watson can say, hey, you know, I've got nothing against this new head coach, so I met with him, but he was able to use that meeting as a way to kind of create another event that shows what he is committed and not committed to doing. The Texans, I think the Texans clearly know where this thing is headed. I said this before, and I really wonder about this because NFL owners have colluded over less, and not just NFL owners. And that is when you look at what's happening in the NFL, do you just write it off as a one-time occurrence that you suddenly have Deshaun Watson that you suddenly, no, I wouldn't either. And there are smart people who are predicting that we may be living in a world not too far off where NFL franchise quarterbacks, all of them, are going to pick where they want to go. And if I know the NFL and the people that run that industry, they're not going to sit back and let that happen. And I don't know how you combat it, but I would think that the Texans are trying. It's not going to work. I mean, and I think Deshaun Watson, anybody who knows him knows that if he's gotten this far, this guy, of all guys, this guy is not going to do this unless he's got somebody steering him and they're fully committed.
There's three levels of this. I mean, there's empowerment, certainly, that's going on. And I don't disagree with anything you're saying. There's empowerment, there's support, and there's payment. And you got to have all three if you want to have a successful relationship with a franchise quarterback going forward. Because I agree with you, and I think a lot of it is financially based. You're paying a quarterback $35 to $40 million a year. I think the quarterback is well within his own belief and rights to expect, hey, they're investing this much in me.
Mm-hmm.
How about the support? You know, I got the empowerment, I got the payment, but I don't have the support. And that's what Deshaun Watson is feeling right now.
Yeah.
It's strange that an organization wouldn't recognize that for a guy who's played at a high level like Deshaun Watson has for Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I said this before, I'll say it again. Just because you pay somebody $35 million a year doesn't necessarily buy their satisfaction.
Not for a short period of time, it does. If you don't have the money and you get the big contract, it's really the feelings of gratitude probably last a little bit of a while. And I think that was true with Deshaun Watson, even though they had traded DeAndre Hopkins. He signed that contract after they traded DeAndre Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
But now the thrill of that has kind of gone away, clearly.
Well, I mean, at that point, it's like Deshaun Watson giving the Texans the benefit of the doubt. Well, they traded my receiver, but there was some strife there with the contract, and he didn't have a good relationship with Bill O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they know what they're doing. Well, they proved last year they didn't know what they were doing.
They clearly don't know what they're doing, but I just wonder if, you know, owners talk to each other. I don't know who Cal McNair knows. I just don't know if the NFL is going to sit back idly and allow this to continue to happen. I don't think Houston can do anything to stop Deshaun Watson. But I do think that the entire industry can't be digging this.
Well, think about it. Like, if before last season, you know, they would have the lists about, like, the tier rankings of coaches on the hot seat or mm-hmm. players most likely. If they did that for quarterbacks before last year, you probably would have put Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson in the very top tier of untradeable franchise quarterback guys, 0% chance they would ever be moved or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The idea of a franchise quarterback, that's what's scary to these owners and GMs, because the idea of you having your franchise quarterback now, if Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson could be moved, which they both could potentially be moved in the next year, any single quarterback in the entire league then can be moved.
Yes. But to Bick's point, if you're an organization and you don't like what's going on with the Deshaun Watson thing because of the empowerment issue and players being able to engineer where they're going to play, this is decades in the making. The yes. NFL has been for good reason, they've made the quarterback position the most important position in sports.
Mm-hmm.
And now the guys that are playing the position realize it.
Matthew Stafford started this, won out, sick of this place, need to win, and nobody really...
Matthew started it.
Right, yeah. And nobody really ever blinked an eye about that. The Deshaun Watson thing is like, okay, that's a Houston problem. Shut up, Jarrett. But now this Russell Wilson thing, this passive-aggressive, hey, by the way, I'm not requesting a trade, but these are the four teams I would go to if we get to that point. I don't know if the powers that be in this league aren't looking at this and going, we can't have this. We can't have anarchy. We cannot have the players dictating what we do. We can't have players saying, you give me an offensive line and this, or I am not playing for you.
Of course they don't like it, because now there is extra pressure on the owners and GMs to actually field a competitive team around the quarterbacks and help the quarterbacks.
They don't like being told what to do.
Well, that too.
You know, it's sort of like you play, I pay. It's sort of like that mentality, and it's being challenged. And the players aren't going to back down. They see what's happening in the NBA. Players in the NFL are as strong-minded. They are fed up of being used. There was a story that came out that DeMaurice Jones, as the head of the players' union, he's feeling some heat, because there are quotes coming out from owners who claim that we should have a statues of this guy outside our stadiums, because they believe that he's steering the players in the wrong direction.
But he also instructed agents yesterday to collude and communicate to help out players in free agency.
So there's
they're freaking out over the use of the word collusion.
Right. And so exactly. And so I think that this story is not going away. The overarching story is not going away, and the NFL is not going to like it one bit. As it relates to Deshaun Watson, though, we've got it. We've reached that point in time where a Deshaun Watson cryptic, unhappy tweet has been retweeted by DeAndre Hopkins. So they're bang-bang together in a tweet thread.
All right. Again, I'm not the biggest hip-hop guy in the world, so I didn't know this until I read about it today. But what he tweeted yesterday, loyalty is everything, don't ever forget it. That's a lyric.
Is it?
From a Future song. And DeAndre Hopkins responded with, what, it's a code we live by? Is that what he responded to it?
Yeah. Yeah, hold on.
It's a code we live by. That's
so the DeAndre Hopkins part is not a lyric. Is that part of the lyric?
I don't think so.
Okay. So...
I have the lyrics now, in front of me. There's very few of them that I can read on the air.
Is that the collective we, or is that the we between D-Hop and Deshaun Watson?
Well,
see, I'm such a troublemaker.
Look at Deshaun Watson. He saw his best receiver engineer his way out of town. Is it different because he's a quarterback? Because he was so amenable to everything before this year?
Yeah. And if to Hopkins, if loyalty is everything, I hardly feel like he's going to want to throw Kyler Murray under the bus then.
Well, it's and I know we've talked about this, and I'm sure we'll circle back to this, but there's actually reports out there that because nobody is answering the phone in Houston regarding Deshaun Watson, the teams are leaving voicemail offers. So you should throw that out there to our audience, Carlin. Have people come up with pitches.
Bickley and Murata listeners, yeah. Leave a voicemail pretending right. to be an NFL.
Should I say for your favorite NFL team or for the Cardinals specifically?
For the Cardinals specifically. Yeah, why not, right? Uh-oh. I mean, wouldn't you love to be listening to those messages? You think people are clowning on the Texans, like offering like, you know, a punter and a second string center?
I don't know. I would love to hear those messages. Mm. We're halfway through on this Friday. Bick's got your blast next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.